have your attention. I'm very excited to introduce this next act. It's such a remarkable story. I'm lucky enough myself, I have a beautiful daughter who's in a hit rock and roll band called Cobra Starship, who've had a couple of big hits. But even I really doubt that the Asher family can pull off over the decades what the Nelson family have pulled off, which is to have a number one record from three different generations. These two guys I'm going to introduce, they've had a number one record, their parents had a number one record, and their grandparents had a number one record. So I've got a way to go to catch up with that record. I've always been a big fan of duos, and the Nelson twins are one of the best duos around. I also was a huge fan of their father, and actually a friend of his, and I did rummage around in the archives, and I found a picture, which I don't know if they've ever seen before, which we may have up on the screen, do we? That's, believe it or not, that's me and Ricky Nelson. Must have been sometime in the 18th century. But I don't know if they've seen it before, but it's a cool picture and I'm proud of it. And I also will tell you that Gordon and I used to do a killer version of Hello Mary Lou in our set. So I'm deeply embedded with all of this music and I hope you really enjoy the show. I hear it's fantastic. I'm looking forward to it myself. Thanks.
He was right there with Elvis.
In the golden age of rock and roll, Elvis was the king, but little Ricky was Prince Charming.
He has a great voice, really sweet voice.
I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stops.
Rick Nelson had a TV show, good looks, a great band, and a 7-year reign at the top of the charts.
He was the person that Life magazine coined the phrase teen idol to describe.
Then the British invasion and network cancellation dealt Rick a double blow.
When the whole world put you down.
Critics counted him out, but Rick kept rocking.
You just can't quit.
Rick always said that life is a series of comebacks.
I went to a garden party.
15 years after his first hit, he wrote a new chapter to his legend.
They just started booing. And I thought, oh, yeah, I gotta get out of here.
They didn't accept him, so he wrote a song that kicked their butts.
He died too young. There's just no doubt about that.
He lived three lives in that one short life that he had.
Rick Nelson's family and friends share the pain and glory of his legendary story. Rick Nelson.
Got another famous lover, broken hearted again. let you know right off the bat who's playing with us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together on the keyboards. An original member of Rick Nelson's Stone Canyon Band. That's Mr. David Morgan on the keyboards. And I have to introduce them as a natural duo as well. On the drums and on the upright and electric bass tonight, the sons of the great Bobby V. This is Jeff and Tommy V, everybody. And I gotta say, this is one of those moments. Not only are we in rock and roll Mecca, basically, being here at the Surf Ballroom, but the fact is, we're living out one of our dreams because we're actually getting a chance to play with one of the greatest guitar players of all time, Mr. Albert Lee, everybody. He played with the Everlees for years, and all I can say is Gunnar and I are still getting along, so we'll keep playing for you. You ready to have a good time with us, everybody? All right. Now, I take a poll every time we play a show. How many folks in the audience remember our grandparents, Ozzie and Harriet? All right? Who incidentally played here at the Surf Ballroom with their big band. We got any Ricky Nelson fans here tonight? Let's hear it for our dad. All right. And I know this is right here. How many people remember us when we looked like Hot Swedish Chicks? All right. Well, this night is about our dad, and we've actually been very, very fortunate to sell a lot of records to people who had no idea who Ricky Nelson was. And to us, he was our best friend. And despite the fact that he sold 280 million records in his career, 60 million albums, well, they didn't sell albums, but in spite of that, he was the nicest guy you'd ever want to meet, and I think that was his greatest accomplishment. So we're here to actually tip the hat to the guy that I think was arguably the most televised rock star in history, and we got the world's greatest home movies, folks. We got 435 episodes of Ozzie and Harriet to cut to. So if you see these screens on the side, it might be tough for y'all to see, but we're gonna tell some stories and we're gonna roll some clips. So let's go right back to the very beginning with our dad as the irrepressible Ricky on the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. Check out your screens. Let's go dark here.
Rick Nelson was born into a musical family in the era of the big bands on May 8, 1940.
I think you're gorgeous, you're charming, darling, you're perfect, and then some.
Rick's father, Ozzie Nelson, was a band leader who topped the charts in 1935. His mother, Harriet, sang in Ozzie's band. Ricky was 4 years old in 1944 when his parents became stars of their own radio show, a comic version of their family life entitled The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet.
The original radio show had David and Ricky in it, but it was played by child actors who were 18 and 19 years old.
In 1949, Ozzie gave Ricky and his older brother David a chance to play themselves.
Rick got such tremendous laughs that my father really didn't want to stop.
Oh, most of the girls in school like you?
Oh, sure, they all do. They think I'm cute.
Oh, Ricky, stop bragging. You're not cute at all.
I don't know. I was looking in the mirror today, and I'm not bad.
12-year-old Ricky was still getting laughs when on October 3rd, 1952, Ozzie and Harriet made its television debut.
I don't see what this argument is about in the first place.
It's just that I'm a jazz man and Dave's a squirter.
Ricky Nelson soon became a household name.
I think you all will know this one.
Bye. Kissing her, making her feel. She's a little girl, and I thank you.
started for our pop on the television show when he was on a date with a girl, and an Elvis song came on the car radio. It was 1956. And to save the date, he told her he was going to cut a record, and she laughed at him. He thought, if I'm going to get one record to hand to the girl and say, now laugh, he was going to do it. Fortunately for us, he played this little single that he made at a local record store for our grandfather, and it's Ozzie Nelson, not Osbourne, okay, the real TV dad. And he wrote a script about it, because our grandfather wrote, produced, edited, directed, and starred in all of the shows. Not a man to shirk from a responsibility. And, well, let's just say this. This is for all those girls in the audience that used to tune into Ozzie and Harriet and kiss the television set when Ricky came on. We got a clip about that. Check out the screens.
Ricky Nelson sings. This came as quite a surprise on April 10, 1957, when unsuspecting viewers tuned into the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. Near the end of the show, brash, wisecracking Ricky revealed a passion for rock and roll that would continue to burn for the rest of his life. The response was electrifying. 1 million copies of I'm Walkin' were sold the week after the broadcast, and for the next 6 years, only Elvis had more chart hits than Ricky Nelson.
It was back when Elvis was king, and Ricky was the crown prince of rock and roll.
Yeah.
definitely the hottest place in Iowa right now. You are a hearty bunch, aren't you? Yeah, bring out the sun-kissed Malibu Beach twins to freeze. I like it. Twin popsicles. It's a good thing. It's amazing. I'm just looking. You got Albert Lee on guitar now. This is amazing. And we are actually twin popsicles. There's only one thing that we can do to up this. To actually play with Albert Lee and James Burton at the same time. Well, can we do that sometime? Okay. I'm just happy. I'm just happy that we got Albert here. This is so awesome. Okay, how many Elvis fans do we have in the audience? Come on. Let's see if we can. There were a lot of similarities between our dad's career and Elvis's career. They were actually really good friends. People ask us, did they know each other? Did they get along? They were really good buddies. And actually, as Matthew mentioned, James Burton, that was actually the first, well, the second thing they had in common other than that one song that that our dad heard in the car with that girl, Arlene. James Burton was a guitar player that they were both fighting over for a long time. He played exclusively for our father for, gosh, about 7 or 8 years. And then in 69, Elvis got him for his comeback special and everything thereon until Elvis passed. And, you know, it was really cool for us because we occasionally get to do shows with James. And we get to learn about our dad through stories James told us from basically their childhood. Because, you know, he kind of moved into the Ozzie and Harriet house. He was an honorary Nelson. And he used to hang out with our dad and our dad's two other best friends, which turned out to be it was Eddie Cochran and Gene Vincent. Yeah, a couple of hoodlums. Right on. The original punk rockers, right? You know, they used to hang out together in Hollywood and try to blow off steam. You know, they all rode Triumph motorcycles. I guess that was the big thing. And they swore it was a club. It wasn't a gang. And they used to kind of go around Hollywood and get into trouble. And it was tough for our dad because, you know, for every woman that used to kiss the television set when he would come on the show, there was a boyfriend that wanted to kill him. So we had to learn how to fight, and his philosophy on fighting, which he didn't like to do, but he's kind of forced into it from time to time, which it was hit first, hit hard, and run like hell. Amen. That was his style. And the story goes, they were out one night, it was James and Eddie and Gene, and all of a sudden, you're walking down Sunset Boulevard, and our dad hears this voice behind him, this big booming voice that says, "Hey there," and a hand on his shoulder. And without thinking, of course, he turns around, clocks the guy, knocks him out. I just wish I could have been there with a Kodak Instamatic 1957 to see Eddie Cochran, Ricky Nelson, James Burton, and Gene Vincent looking down at the LAPD cop our dad has just laid out. You know? Gene Vincent, not the sharpest tool in the shed, said, "Hey, Ricky, maybe he doesn't recognize you. Get home." So our dad hightails it home. Within the 5 minutes it took, the entire Hollywood division of the L.A. police force is being served coffee by Harriet Nelson on the front lawn. Everybody knew where the Nelson family lived. You know, the exterior shot, the first shot in the show, that was their real house. Still there. Is it 1822 or 1622? 1822 Camino Palmero. And our grandmother Harriet told us, we got to talking about those old times and Elvis Presley and what the connection was. And you'll get this later, but Harriet said that there was a bit of footage on the Ozzie and Harriet show that predated our dad singing "I'm Walking," where he dressed as Elvis for a Halloween costume party, and we had never seen it, and she said, no, your grandfather didn't get a chance to re-edit that show before he passed away, so it went into a family film vault. And we thought we'd do something special, so we went in and we found that piece of film of Ricky Nelson playing Elvis Presley for y'all to see for the first time here in a long time, all right? So right now, you don't have to choose Elvis or Ricky. You're going to get both of them. All I can say is, check out the screens and dig the sideburns, baby.
Love me tender, love me sweet, never let me go.
I gotta tell you a great story. When Elvis called me in 1969 to put a band together for him, we talked, and you know, his opening line was like, "You know, I watched the Ozzie and Harriet show to watch Ricky sing a song and you play guitar on the Ozzie and Harriet show," and I said, "Wow, that's great." I mean, it blew me away. I loved it. But, you know, it goes to show you that he was aware of what was going on. He was very well aware of Rick's music.
when my dad met him for the first time, he was really nervous about it, and he was quite a bit younger than Elvis. And Elvis came out and ran over to my dad, gave him this big hug. He's like, Ricky, I love your show. And he's, you know, treating him like a little brother. And they always had this really warm, nice relationship.
Right on home. I ain't had no milk in over
crowd. Gunner's been wanting to go solo for about 45 years, so we're going to give him a chance to do that real quick. But before we do that, I'm going to give you a little backstory on the next song we're going to play. There were a lot of great balladeers in the 50s. Of course, there was Elvis, there was Roy Orbison, Mr. Sinatra, and Ricky Nelson could sing a heck of a ballad. And there was one song in particular that was one of our favorites growing up. It turned out to be my favorite Beatles' favorite song as well. We're going to give Gunner a chance to at least sing solo for a little while on this one. Here's a song called Lonesome Town. Here's a clip. Check out this one.
Elvis turned off a lot of parents. Ricky didn't. Pat Boone turned off a lot of kids. Ricky didn't.
There's a place where lovers go.
Ricky's heartbreaking ballad, Lonesome Town, went top 10 in the fall of 58.
I loved Lonesome Town. I just thought it was a kind of nice, dark little ballad. There's a place where lovers go.
Cry my troubles.
Half Nelson.
There's a place where lovers go to cry their troubles away. The broken heart stay. You can buy a dream or two to last you all through the years, and the only price you pay is a heart full of tears. Going down to Lonesome Town, where the broken heart stays. Going down to Lonesome Town to cry my trouble away. In the town are filled with regret. Baby, down in Lonesome Town, I can learn before good.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Albert Reed.
Thank you.
Teen Idol phase of his career. And if you don't mind, we're going to go to the 60s right now before we come back again. And our dad was credited with founding one of the first ever true country rock bands called the Stone Canyon Band. And it was kind of a cool time for us as well because our dad was kind of forced into retirement in 66 when the Ozzy and Harry show ended. And he stayed home for a while and expanded his family, which is a good thing. And we didn't know until later on when we grew up that the people that were coming over to the house trying to get him out of retirement, and more importantly, trying to get her to write songs. Because in the 50s, more often than not, of course, Buddy Holly was a great exception to the rule, but more of the 50s artists, like Elvis and stuff, never wrote a song. It was up to professional writers to bring them a song, and it was up to them to interpret them. But everything changed in the 60s. It turned around. It was the Beatles, Bob Dylan, you know, bands that and artists that basically wrote their own tunes. And it was actually later on that we found out that the guy with the crazy hair that wouldn't leave the house trying to get our dad to write songs for the first time turned out to be Bob Dylan. And our next door neighbor, we called him Uncle George. He was a little shaggy at the time, but a very sweet guy. He used to come over and listen to the old Ricky Nelson records to steal the James Burton, which was actually George Harrison from Beatles. And our babysitter, who after her first band broke up, was actually Mama Cass Elliott from the Mamas and Papas. We were hungry for years. I found this out too. The first person to ever do the song Dream a Little Dream of Me, you know, Mama Cass's big hit, was the Ozzie Nelson Orchestra in 1936. Look it up on Wiki, it's right there. Pretty cool, kind of came full circle. But these people all tried to get our dad out of retirement, and it worked. He formed this band, and he wasn't selling a whole lot of records, but he was happier than he'd ever been. So if you don't mind, we're going to go to that era for a second, and we brought some film that shows you the time that we really remember growing up. He always had an acoustic in his hand, and he was always really a happy guy. And you'll notice at the end of this, and I say this lovingly for years now, Gunner's moves have not changed in all these years. And nobody rocks Huggies. Nobody rocks Huggies like the Nelson Twins. Check out the movie.
Life before you're over, I want something to show for all my trouble.
Ricky, you know, like a lot of people, like us in the beginning, was kind of an Elvis takeoff. A lot of people start like that. They start like their idol, and then they develop, they find their own voice, and Ricky really found his. So when he got to Garden Party and things like that, I think there was like a new respect then.
Tell me.
This is the first song that Rick Nelson ever wrote that broke the Billboard Top 40 in 1967. You ever wanted to know what kind of a guy he was? Listen to the words he wrote here. A song called Easy to Be Free.
Did you ever want to go where you've never gone before? Did you ever want to know things you've never known before? I'll take you there with me. Take you there with me, and maybe then you'll see.
the morning sun. And after all is said and done, I'm free. Did you ever want to go where you've never gone before? Did you ever want to know things you've never known before? I'll take you there with me, and maybe then you'll see it's easy to be free. Yeah, it's so easy,
easy
to be free. Yeah, it's so easy to be free. It's so easy to be free,
that Bob Dylan actually wrote for our Pop to Cut. We both had hits with it, but then in 1967 or so. It's called She Belongs to Me.
She's got everything she needs. She's an artist. She don't look back. She's got everything she needs. She's an artist. She don't look back. She can paint the daytime and the nighttime. Paint the daytime black. You may start outstanding, proud to scare anything she sees. You may start outstanding, proud to steal anything she sees. But you'll wind up peeking the keyhole upon your knees. Na, 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 na. She never stumbles, she's got no place to fall. Never stumbles, she's got no place to fall. She's nobody's child, the law can't touch her at all.
if you don't mind, I know this is a Ricky Nelson night, but for a very good reason, we would very much like it if you would allow us to do a little bit of a song of ours that went number one in 1990. Thank you, for very good reason. People asked if our dad actually gave us any advice when we were starting out. He did, actually. He said two things. He was a very soft-spoken guy, a very mellow guy. He said, boys, if you're going to do this, if you're going to be in this business, keep your sense of humor. Because in this business, you're going to need it.
Hallelujah.
And two, be songwriters first and foremost. He said, the way he saw it, a person could find in any town across America, chances are, someone who looked better, played better, sang better. But if you're a songwriter and you're writing from the heart and those songs connect with people, you actually are alive forever in a very real sense. And he had just come off of that experience where he had reinvented himself with the Stone Canyon Band. And he told us that he would have given all of those number ones that other people had written for him in his early years for the feeling that he got when he wrote Garden Party, which was a piece of himself. So Matt and I started playing when we were 6 years old. And I started as a drummer, Matt started as a bass player. And we actually never gave it up. We kept on playing. We had our first recording session at the age of 11, on our 11th birthday. We didn't know until years later that those two nice ladies singing backup for us were the Pointer Sisters. We started playing the LA club scene when we were 12 years old, professionally, with all those skinny tie bands and all that stuff. And about 13, we learned how to tune. We sounded a lot better after that. We got our first recording contract when we were 19 years of age, and our first number one on our 22nd birthday. So it put the Nelson family in the Guinness Book as the only family in history with three generations of number one hitmakers. And it wouldn't have happened without our dad's advice. So we're going to do this here real quick, and it's very appropriate, actually, that we get to play this one song. We were really so fortunate. It's our favorite producer of all time is Mr. Peter Asher, who introduced us tonight. It really was, seriously, it's really a joy for us because we actually really did grow up on all of his amazing productions, all of his records. And our sound would never have been even remotely what it turned into had it not been for his records and growing up with our father's Stone Canyon Band in Southern California. And when we released in 1990, that was like during the time of the confidence rock thing. You know, our contemporaries were like Guns N' Roses. Now, Guns N' Roses, awesome band, but they came from a really strong blues background. Matthew and I grew up as folkies in Southern California. So when they were doing that sort of thing, Matt and I came out with a very particular sound. And it's illustrated by this. Matthew started this song with his one guitar figure. And it really does speak very, very well of his personality. Go for it, Matt. Isn't that nice? It's beautiful, isn't it? It just says it perfectly. Just like Matthew, it's just like his personality. Now, my place in the twinship, very simply, is good twin, bad twin. Enough said, right? But it's funner with Gunner, I promise. So when Matthew came up with that thing, it was my job to screw up a perfectly beautiful, pretty thing. And here's what I did.
Jesse had a friend.
Exactly. Now you put those two things together, and I humbly submit they go together like peas and carrots. Something like this.
Here she comes, oh, just like an angel. Seems like forever that she's been on my mind, but nothing has changed. She thinks I'm a waste of her time. She goes, y'all she don't know what she's missing. Can't she see I'll never give her the fight? I'll do all I can, cause she understands my desire. I've been on the outside looking in, let me into your heart. Another night on my own. I give up my pride to save me from the hell.
Crowd, but how many people remember the vinyl 45? Come on, you liars, you're among friends. Okay, very simply, you heard a song on the radio you wanted to make a part of your life. You went down to the record store, when there was such a thing as record stores. You forked over your hard-earned 60 cents from mowing lawns to buy the A-side, kind of taking for granted that the B-side was going to be an absolute waste of time, correct? Now, our dad was a rock and roll fan first and foremost. And he always felt a little cheated when he went down to the record store and spent money on a record, and, you know, just the B-side was a piece of crap. So he made sure he told the record company from jump, I want to put my strongest material, A and B, so I can give everybody double their money's worth. And that's what he did. With the next two songs, we're going to play for you back to back. And I want you to imagine that these two absolutely awesome, iconic Ricky Nelson number ones, we're going to play A and B for you. You're going to hear the first one first. That you're there with all of your friends, you've got, they're spinning your single, and you've got your little name written on the sleeve because someone's going to walk away with it if you don't. And you get done with the first side, and then you flip it over really quickly as soon as you can, and you center it by eye because, of course, you've lost that little plastic thing that goes in the middle, and you let the B side drop. Okay, the first one, again, like I said, huge number ones, but the first one's extra notable for one reason. The Smithsonian Institution contacted the Nelson family about a year ago to let us know that Ozzie Nelson, because Ozzie Nelson put a moving travel scene behind our dad as he was singing and playing his latest single at the time, his video for Traveling Man is the first conceptual rock music video in history. So Ozzie Nelson was not only the father of David and Ricky, but he was the father of MTV. So take a look at your screens. We're going to come back with a great song called Traveling Man.
And suddenly Rick had the biggest hit of his career.
I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stops all over the world.
In the spring of 61, Traveling Man became Rick's second number one single. He wasn't an adult yet, but he'd already made his first comeback.
In my book, he was right there with Elvis. In fact, there seemed to be a point where Rick passed Elvis, and that was Traveling Man.
Ozzie Nelson was still featuring his son's latest songs on the ninth season of Ozzie and Harriet.
Rick and his father were, in a very real sense, responsible for some of the earliest music videos.
So I've all been through. Look out.
Here's a song from 1936, written by Johnny Mercer. Our grandparents cut it, and our dad cut it in the 60s and 70s. It's called Fool's Rush In. Our pop's 18 years old. He plays a two-pistol gunfighter named Colorado. He rides into town, teams up with the Duke. They shoot it up, save the day. He gets a chance to sing a song with Dean Martin in the middle of the picture for no reason at all. He had the number one television show at the time, about to have the number one movie. He had the number one song with Poor Little Fool. It wasn't awful being Ricky Nelson at 18, was it, you know? And we grew up, and there was this life-size portrait of our dad down at the staircase that the set designer on the film had painted of him with his two pistols, hat hung low, cigarette in his hand, looking beautiful, and I just thought, wow, that's about the echelon of cool. And every time I tried to talk to our pop about what it was like making that picture, he'd get weird.
He just kind of changed the subject. How's school? It's like, oh, school's fine, Pop, thanks. And he just got a little shy about it, and we really didn't know what the truth behind what happened on that set was until we got a chance to talk to Angie Dickinson, kind of. Gunner, we got a great story about this. Gunner, make it quick.
Okay, the year was 1986. We just lost our dad 2 weeks earlier when we got a call out of the blue from the wonderful Dick Clark, who had been doing that American Music Awards show since the Dead Sea was just sick. And he knew we were going through a lot. He said, boys, your dad was a real friend of all of ours, and we thought it would be wonderful if we could pay tribute to him this year on the American Music Awards. And if you have it in you to come on the show, and we want you guys to actually sing it. So we did. And it was two scared 18-year-old kids singing in front of 240 million people. And Mr. Clark was just wonderful about the night. He was our shepherd. He was great. And he taught us that night that people in Hollywood need no excuse whatsoever to throw themselves a party. All right? That night was no exception. We found ourselves at the Hilton Ballroom, two buildings down from the Shrine Auditorium where we just filmed the show, in a convention hall, I guess, that was designed for about 2,500 people. At least 5,000 Los Angelians had wedged themselves into this place, everyone trying to outcool each other. Matthew and I were in the back of the room, people watching. Of course, we were the only two normal people there. Being incognito in our pastel pink and blue zoot suits and 5-foot-high Aquanet white bottle hairstyles. Give it up for Aquanet white bottle, folks. It wouldn't be 1980s without
cement in a can.
That's right. Okay, so we're sitting there watching everybody do the thing. But halfway through the night, about an hour and a half into this whole thing, I don't know if you've ever been in a public place when something's about to go down. You know, people are looking around nervously trying to find a source of the commotion. And we realized from our vantage point that the whole room as a collective started to focus on the one entrance, and then the room started to part like the Red Sea to make way for this incredibly hot older mama. She looked like Jessica Rabbit. I'm not kidding, she had a red gown, the pencil-thin waist. She had a young stud on each arm, because for this woman, apparently one date for the evening was not enough. 2 steps into the room, she made every woman in that room, a third her age, really, really nervous. Okay, she started walking up this path people were making for her, and about halfway up the room, I realized it's Angie Dickinson. And she looks good, son. Okay, the music started to dim. All attention was on her. She starts walking up this room about 30 feet away from me. I realize she's looking in my general direction. 15 feet away, she's looking at me. She walks all the way up to me. At this point, you can hear a pin drop in the room. She stops a foot away. She gives me the elevator eyes. She leans in and she says, "Your daddy was a hell of a man." And turns around and walks away. And all I could think was, go Pop. Mystery solved. So check out the very genuine smile in a young Ricky Nelson's face in the next clip.
This has been one of the few peaceful scenes from the picture Rio Bravo, with John Wayne, Dean Martin, and Walter Brennan here, and a new girl, Angie Dickinson.
Tell them about Ricky Nelson.
Oh yeah, that's me.
He did a movie called Rio Bravo, and they wanted to kind of promote the movie, so they went out to Tucson, and they shot a Life magazine, shot a whole bunch of stuff. And then they turned it into a cover, and they actually used the phrase teenage idol to describe him in the piece. And it was kind of the first time that phrase grabbed on, and then this song, Teenage Idol, was written for him to sing.
Hey, we got to send this one out to somebody that might need to hear this right now. So this one tonight goes out to the Lindsay Lohan Relief Fund.
Okay, here we go.
Some people call me a teenage idol. Some people say they envy me. I guess they got no way of knowing how lonesome I can be. I need somebody
Thank you so much. You know, it's amazing to us. My brother and I have actually, it's our 10th show in a row in as many days. Tomorrow, actually, we're playing in Huntsville, Alabama. And yeah, it's quite a little jump there, you know, if the weather permits. But I got to say that it's the greatest job in the world when you're doing something that you absolutely love to do anyways, and you get a chance to play with your heroes, not only the band that backs us up, are our personal and musical heroes, but playing with Albert Lee is really a dream come true for any musician. Let's put it together, Al. I'm humbled and I am honored. And, you know, I mentioned something before about our pop and his personality. You know, we meet everybody that wants to meet us after shows. And that's something that he tried to do as well. It was a little difficult for him because he couldn't say no to an autograph or anything like that. He honestly was the nicest guy ever. But we get a chance to meet people after the shows that tell us stories. And one fella told us a story about growing up in Hollywood himself when he was about 18. And I think it really told us something about our dad from a time that we weren't around, obviously. And at the peak of his success and how down to earth he was. And I think, it's kind of like this. He said, boys, I was driving through Hollywood, and, you know, I was with a girl, and she was way too cute for me, and I begged her for a date, and I worked after school, and all that stuff. Sounds a little familiar, right? And he said, I was taking her out to Grandma's Chinese Theater and the Brown Derby for dinner. I begged my dad for the family Edsel, and we're driving down the Sunset Boulevard, and we got to Sunset and Gower there in Hollywood, and my date starts to lose her mind, freaking out, shrieking at the top of her lungs, because guess who's pulled up alongside of me in his convertible? Your dad. And your dad, he said, didn't miss a beat. He looked over at the commotion in the car next to him, locked eyes with me, kind of assessed the situation, gave me a little smirk, and he said, hey man, I'm going to see you at the tennis club again next week. We're going to play another couple of sets. Sure, Rick. Yeah, Rick, I'll see you. I'll see you there. Don't be late next time. Say hi to your mom and dad. He drove off. He said, your dad was so cool, he was the wingman for a cat he never even met before. And in case you're wondering, he said, oh yeah. And the date went very well. Yes, it did. Here's another piece of film for you. Check out the screens.
I believe for what you're saying when you say you're going steady with nobody else but me.
I started loving Rick's music as a kid.
Nobody else but me.
Rick's records had all the best ingredients of rock and roll. Great songs, great singing, great band. Did I say great guitar?
Only two rockers had a number one album in the 1950s. Elvis Presley and Ricky Nelson. Rick Nelson sold 60 million albums. He scored 19 top 40 hits in Great Britain, where they didn't even get the Ozzie and Harriet show.
Over in England, we knew nothing about the Nelson show. Ozzie and Harriet, to us, he was the famous one in the family.
Stood up, broken hearted again.
One for the lovers.
I could never be loved by anyone sweeter than you. No, I could never belong to anyone sweeter than you. With you to stand beside me, I'll never be alone. And what more could I long for than to have you for my own? My only desire is loving you eternally.
The smart men in the audience will grab the best girl right now. No,
no other lover could ever mean so much to me. So if you say you love me forever, I'll be true. And what more could I long for than to spend my life with you? I could never be loved by anyone sweeter than you. Though I could never belong to anyone sweeter than you.
Thank you. Matthew Nelson, everybody.
Can't it be long? We couldn't have talked at a quarter of nine. Would have had a party plenty of time.
David Morgan on the keyboards, everybody. Jeff B on the drums. Tommy B on the bass. You're still with us, right? Okay, I know we got some singers here in Iowa. And as I said...
Is that okay, Peter? Is that all right?
All right. Well, watch it. We're going to get you up here, man.
All right. He's like, no. I feel like I'm being scouted, and that's a good thing.
I hope so. Actually a really important song. We mentioned a time in our dad's life when he was writing his own tunes. And, you know, the times have changed. You got to think about it. Right around, you know, the Beatles coming into America and Bob Dylan and stuff, everybody that was Eisenhower era was considered completely over. All the Sun Records cats were having a really hard time getting a gig, let alone getting radio airplay. That just wasn't happening. And our dad took that opportunity to really dig deep. And he was fortunate. He was in an interesting situation because he could come from inspiration and not desperation. He'd done very well on the Ozzy and Harriet show. He had enough financial resources to be able to really do what he wanted to do, not just pay the bills. And so he took that time to put together what the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has since credited as the very first true country rock band with his band, the Stone Canyon Band. And he toured the country, I guess from 1964, 65, all the way up into the 70s with this new band. He wasn't as commercially successful at this time, but he was the happiest he'd ever been. He loved that band. He loved actually, showing up a part of himself and being vulnerable. And it was right around 1971 when he got a phone call from a promoter who offered to fulfill a lifelong dream, which was to play at Madison Square Garden in New York City. My dad had always wanted to do it. But he was concerned because the promoter was putting on what he billed as a rock and roll reunion concert. And he told the promoter, listen, I've been doing this new trip now for 7 years. I don't even remotely look like I used to look. I don't sound like I used to sound. And this is my new thing. And they're going to expect oldies. And the promoter said, Rick, as long as you show up, they're not going to care. They just want to see you. They just want you there. So against his better judgment, he took his Stone Canyon Band to New York. And he knew that he was in trouble when he actually peeked from behind the curtain. And all he saw was a sea of saddle shoes and poodle skirts. And that was just the guys. And he went out on stage, and he could feel the audience wasn't really with him. They were confused. This isn't 1961 black and white TV Ricky anymore. Who's this guy who's old? I guess for them to admit that Ricky Nelson had gotten older, they'd have to admit they too had grown up as well. And he went out there, he played his old hits, but with his new country rock spin. But about 5 or 6 songs into it, when he went into his current single, which was the Rolling Stones' Honky Tonk Woman, which was a new song at the time, was too much. 20,000 people booed him off the stage that night. And he took that event, which would have been the undoing
of many lesser men. And he went back to his studio in Los Angeles. And he told us about 10 days later, in a fit of inspiration in the middle of the night, as a songwriter, most of the time you're going to have to work at it. But if you're lucky, and you're in the right place at the right time, and you get out of a song's way, it just kind of happens. And that's what happened with the next one. It was like a gift. The lyrics, music, everything. It was like a stereo playing in his head. Couldn't write it down fast enough. And he released this as a single. And it was a blind side to the industry and to the world. Much like American Pie was, Don McLean. It was really a statement after a lifetime of being who other people wanted him to be. He made the statement that, hey, you know what? This is who I am now. Like it or not, I've learned that you can't please everyone, so you gotta please yourself. The song is called Garden Party, and you're gonna help us sing it. But first, take a look at the screen.
Rick agreed to play a 50s rock and roll revival show at Madison Square Garden on October 15, 1971. With Bobby Rydell, Bo Diddley, and Chuck Berry.
He was uncomfortable with the idea from the get-go. And when we went on stage, the place was full, over 20,000 people.
It was sort of instant non-acceptance, you know?
Someone up in the top at their someplace booed. And that's what Rick heard over and above all the applause.
There was no mistaking a pocket of booing at this shoulder-length, haired teen idol doing Rolling Stones and Bob Dylan songs at a rock and roll revival.
I went to a garden party to reminisce with my old friend.
The incident inspired Rick to write what would become his signature song.
Play the songs again.
It just all kind of came out. It was great to be able to have that feeling of just like somebody else doing it, writing it, you know.
Released in the summer of 72, Garden Party became Rick's first top 10 single in nearly a decade.
But it's all right now. I learned my lesson well. See, you can't please everyone, so you've got to please yourself.
He came back, and he came back on his own terms. And he wasn't pandering to people's idea of some 50s rock and roller, you know? He'd grown up.
I think after the whole Garden Party experience, he felt like he'd spiked the ball, and he didn't really need to push anymore.
One, two, two.
I went to a garden party to reminisce with my old friend. A chance to share a little memory. Party. They all knew my name. No one recognized me. Didn't look the same. But it's all right now. I learned my lesson well. See, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself. People came miles around. Everyone was there. Yoko brought a walrus, but there was magic in the air. Over in the corner, much to my surprise, Mr. Hughes hid Dylan's shoe, wearing his disguise. But it's alright now. I learned my lesson well. See, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself. La da da, la da da, la da da. Living along the old song, my heart that's blinding me, but no one heard. I said hello to Mary Lou. She belongs to me. And I sang a song about a honky tonk. It was time to be here. What is it? All right.
to please yourself.
We're twins, so he's just insulting himself. It's all right.
You know, a lot of people look more like David Spade.
That's right, I do a little bit. We're going to meet everybody who wants to meet us after the show, okay? And we've already kind of given up on the idea of sleep tonight, so come on up and say hello, shake a hand and stuff. And it's kind of a tradition here at the Surf, but also at our shows, because, frankly, we really feel that we're in the connection business, and we've just been very fortunate. This show we put on tonight,
hey, Buster, if you leave, you're going to miss out. I know you're trying to get to your car first, but you're going to miss out. You're going to hate it. I'm telling you.
Look, they started running.
Yeah. All right.
It's all right. It's all right. See, this is a tradition for us, and it's all right. You guys can stay, because we're going to have the most fun.
The guy thinks he's at a baseball game.
That's right. You know, we're going to sign autographs and stuff like that, and there's a table over there. We actually did bring some CDs of the night. The reason why I bring that up is because it took me 5 years to get in the same room with our younger brother, Sam. James Burton is playing on it. We're playing all of our dad's cuts with these cats on stage here. Of course, this is the first time we played with Albert, although I would love to have him.
The last song we're about to play for you is also on there, too, and it's a brand new body of work. I know we've been here 3 or 4 times, but Matt's really, he should be proud of it. He worked for 5 years trying to get this thing together.
Thank you, sir.
It's us with the full band doing our thing, and we have to apologize in advance. We brought as many CDs as we could.
We really did, actually.
But if we run out by the time you get there, I'm sorry, we took Delta here.
And he always says this, but it's true.
Which it does stand for don't expect your luggage to arrive. Okay, only half the CDs showed up. This is a woman who works for Delta, obviously.
Okay.
I just think for $35 a bag, they should guarantee it gets there. That's just what I think.
That's
know?
Right.
You know, a lot of people ask us questions about the family, so I'm going to get Gunnar to do the Reader's Digest version of the family, starting with our Uncle David.
Okay, really quickly, our Uncle David was the last original cast member to pass. He actually passed away about 18 months ago, and we say 2 things about that. One, he's in a better place, and 2, if anybody can figure out how to broadcast a sitcom from heaven now that he's got the entire cast back together, it's Ozzie Nelson. So stay tuned for that. Up on the screens, tonight you got to see our sister Tracy Nelson, a fine actress.
She was on Square Pegs. She was, she is the queen of Lifetime movies. She's done 32 of them, which means she's either being killed or killing somebody every week. And she was on the Father Dowling Mysteries with Tom Bosley forever. Our sister Tracy playing a nun. Folks, that's acting. On our mom's side of the family, our mom, Kristen Harmon, a fine arts painter. She's actually living in Santa Fe, New Mexico with her 18 dogs, which I guess is where the government makes you live when you have 18 dogs. Her sister Kelly, our Aunt Kelly, was the 1.5 calorie mint girl.
The Tic Tac lady.
Tic Tac lady.
Remember those commercials?
Yeah. Okay.
That's Aunt Kelly.
Their father, our grandpa, was Tom Harmon of Michigan, won the Heisman Trophy at Michigan in 1940. One of the greatest football players of all time. Sportscaster in later years. He married who Life magazine voted the most beautiful woman in the world that same year. Our grandmother, Elise Knox. We called her Nino. And I don't know if you're like us, but there's one person in many families who's the glue that holds everybody together. And Nino was really that for both sides of our family. We miss her a lot. We actually just lost her about 3 months ago. She was super cool. We lost her at 96 years of age.
Yep, she made it 96.
She was jazzercising up until the day she died, man. And she was always an actress to the very end. Always, she was lying about her age to the end. I'm only 94. She was great. And they made a beautiful son, who you get to enjoy on television's number one show, our Uncle Mark Harmon on NCIS, as Gibbs. Listen to you chicks ventilate.
He gets better looking as he ages, doesn't he?
Yeah, we haven't been smacked on the back of the head yet, so we're doing something right. And he married Pam Dauber, and technically that makes them Mark and Mindy. So you'll get that home on the way home. Let me do my thing. So basically all we're saying is that we actually know that with a family tree like ours, chances are we're going to be the low-hanging fruit for some time to come. So come up, shake a hand, take a picture with us, take a piece of us home with you. I'll give you Matthew's room number. And we just really honestly want to thank you on behalf of both sides of the family, truly, for giving us the greatest job in the world for the last 120 years. We love you guys, and thank you for having us back. I think we've actually wanted to save the best for last. There was a song we had just written that we sang last time we were here, and we get a lot of requests for it. And there's that line in Garden Party, our dad's song. If memories were all I sang, I'd rather drive a truck. And I think what he meant is you have to have roots and wings. I think that's the whole balance thing there. And so we're going to leave you with something that's on the newer side of us. But more importantly, we want to let you know what we're all about with the last song we're going to do. And before we do that, we have one last clip that's going to round out the evening, folks. Check out your screens.
After his death, on January 21st, 1987, Rick Nelson was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame by John Fogerty.
I looked over at Sam Phillips and I said, he made some of the best records ever made in rock and roll. And Sam, he even gave you a run for the money.
As much credit as he's gotten, it ain't near enough. His feel, his understanding, and his love for music. That was Rick Nelson's life.
I believe
what you say when you say it, don't miss. Nobody gets to me. We always play on New Year's, it seems like, and that's kind of when his plane went down, so I always make a point to play a Ricky Nelson song. And I usually do Believe What You Say.
In the summer of 2001, Capitol Records reissued all of Rick's classic Imperial recordings from the 50s and 60s, as well as his 1981 album, Playing to Win.
It's a tragedy that he's not here right now making great music. But then again, he had an absolutely great, stunning career.
It's just an amazing journey that Rick took. And, I don't even want to go in with the way that it ended, because I think Ricky's music will live forever. I mean, we know that.
He was rock and roll's biggest fan. And he was not a quitter. He had a lot of guts, a lot of courage, but most of all, he was a really sweet person.
This is my last time around. I don't know where I'm bound.
For a long time, I was really angry at him because I felt like he knew he was going to go when he went. And I was really pissed at him for not hanging in longer.
I think he saw the fact that he wasn't going to be around forever. A lot of his music conveyed that in a way.
I thank you for the love
He never saw himself getting older. And he didn't.
I don't know where I'm going.
To me, he's still on the road. I'm still waiting for the suitcase at the landing. You know, I'm still kind of holding on for that.
See you later.
I've never known what it is to act like a grown-up. It really doesn't happen, you know, what I'm doing. And maybe that's part of the thing that's attractive to me. Because, I mean, you don't get old, I guess. I don't know.
A few years back, Matthew and I were writing songs together, and he threw a question out in the room. He said, if you had 5 minutes left and only one song that you could sing, what would you want that song to be about? Well, that was the day that we rediscovered the fact these guitars of ours have truly brought us all over the world and back many times. We've had an incredible ride so far, amazing successes, crushing defeats, all hallmarks of lives well lived. But that said, there isn't a day that goes by that we wouldn't give everything we've ever gotten and everything we'll ever get for just 5 more minutes of tangible time with our best friend, with our dad. So we wrote a song that day about what we've learned is the most important thing of all, which is telling the people that you love them while you've got the chance. This is a song about that very thing. It's called Just Once More.
Got a million pictures in my heart and here I am. I'm afraid that they'll just fade with time. Photographs are cold and the memories hard to hold. Never got the chance to say goodbye. One more day, one more night, one more chance to make it right. A few more words, a few more laughs, it doesn't seem too much to myself asking you out loud, what would you do if you were in my place? Cause every day in every way I try and make you proud, but I wish that I could tell you face to face. Just one more day, one more night, one more chance to make it right. A few more words, a few more laughs, doesn't seem too much to ask. And I know it's just a dream, but I give up everything if you'd walk through that door just once more. Seasons come and seasons go, but love lives on.
Just one more day. Coming up, fellas. Albert Lee on the guitar, everybody. I just talked to them and explained that I thought we should end the evening with a Buddy Holly song in his honor. So they very kindly agreed to come back on. Wasn't that an amazing show? And a great end to a great evening. So while the band all come back on and get situated, let me remind you, I'll be back on Saturday when I'll be singing a few songs myself and telling stories about the 60s and so on, and doing some movie clips and all that. And that'll be a kind of British Invasion evening with Eric Burdon and Terry Sylvester and Denny Lane and all kinds of cool people. So please, I look forward to seeing you at that. And tomorrow is Marvin Short and the Sock Hop Band, so that should be fun. So I think a conference is going on about which Buddy Holly song and which key, and then we'll be right with you. We weren't planning on doing one last one after that one, but if you don't mind, this is very, very appropriate. It's amazing how the circles in rock and roll are all intertwined in an amazing way. Well, let's see. Here we are at the Surf Ballroom. Of course, the connection with Buddy Holly is going to be forever here with that. But when we got here today, we actually met actually a hero of mine, Mr. Gary Busey, who's going to be playing for you later on this weekend. And he let us know that when he was growing up, he would listen to Ricky Nelson sing on television and all that. And when he did the Buddy Holly story years, I mean, that was him playing and singing and doing the whole thing. Now, what he doesn't know is when Matthew and I were growing up, we actually loved the Buddy Holly story, watching him do his thing. And years later, the very last song that Ricky Nelson ever sang was in Gunnersville, Alabama, right before he was on his way to that fateful New Year's Eve gig at a place called PJ's Alley, and the last song he ever sang was Buddy Holly's Rave On. So if you don't mind, just to kind of connect the dots, you know? We're gonna try to work through this whole thing, okay guys? Let's start with a riff like this, okay?